Thank you for spending your evening with us and helping us all experience the joy of travel every single day, even if we're stuck at home. And today we have someone who has helped millions of travelers do exactly that, perhaps more than anyone else I know, Drew Binsky. Drew has traveled to 191 countries and was just a few months away from finishing his journey to every country in the world when coronavirus obviously put that on pause. He has documented the entire trip with daily videos that tell the untold story of so many of the world's most interesting people and cultures. And I know I've binged on so many of his incredible videos and have contributed significantly to his 1.3 billion views. Not only are his videos entertaining and educational, but they're such a positive voice in the world as Drew brings to life the humanity of places that most people have never even heard of, or worse, have misguided perceptions and fears about. And for anyone that has done a creative video pursuit, you know just how extremely difficult and time-consuming it is to find stories, shoot them, and edit them. But he does that like a machine, and every single day he hits publish. He is most likely the hardest working travel content creator out there. So without further ado, Drew, I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Welcome, and thank you so much for spending your evening with us.
Conrad, that was probably the best intro I ever had. So can I maybe use that in a future in a future speech or something to give it? That was great. Thank you.
It's all yours. So really, before we dive in, I just wanted to check in on you. Like, you were just a few months away from finishing a goal that you've been working so hard and long for with visiting every country in the world. And you were working on probably your biggest creative project yet with your documentary. And I imagine mm-hmm. that's put on hold as well. So, you know, before we jump in, just like, how are you feeling? Where's your head at?
It's weird. Like, when I look back and I'm older, it's like I visited 99% of the world. And then the last 1%, the world ended, or the world was on pause. So it's been really rough, but I'm just kind of trying to look through it and look at the bright side. Things are already starting to open up here in LA, and maybe we're on the other side of the mountain. And even if we're not, I still think the paranoia will die down and countries will slowly open up. It's just like my last six countries are Palau, Saudi Arabia, Ghana, Ecuador, Venezuela, and Jamaica. So whenever one of them opens up, if Jamaica opens up in a few weeks and the airlines are going there and I won't be quarantined, then I'll be heading out there. So I'm just trying to make the best of it. It's tough. It's really tough though.
Yeah, well, we're rooting for you, and we're all eager to get back on the road. Which brings up something interesting that's been, you know, on my mind lately, and I was talking about this recently with mm-hmm. Our mutual friend Leah Bamonte.
Yeah,
but you can drop me in some random place in West Africa, or Papua New Guinea, or anywhere, and I'm not out of my comfort zone. I'm like, I love it. Yeah. I live for it. That's why I travel. But if you tell me, hey, don't leave your house for a few months, like, yeah, that's a new experience. And, you know, at 191 countries, like, you know, you're almost twice as, you know, traveled twice as much as I have. And, you know, you're certainly, your pace has been, you know, even more intense over the last couple of years. So I imagine this is by far the most outside of your comfort zone you've been, in a long time. So how are you dealing with it? And like, what are you doing to satisfy your love of travel while stuck at home?
Yeah, it's been rough. I've been on the road more or less for 8 years, nonstop. So it's been really hard. About 30 countries a year, if you break it down, 7 years, 30 countries a year. So it's hard. Yeah. Being inside your own walls and not able to explore is much harder than being dropped off anywhere in any country. And I can just kind of find my own way. So the answer is, it's been really tough. I've been recycling old content to kind of keep new travel stories coming. I don't want to turn into a storyteller about coronavirus. People already know what's happening. I did one or two stories on it. I'm just trying to like put it past me. And the good news is I have here on my hard drives, I have four terabyte drives right here. And that's every single second of content I've ever shot. It's all right here in front of me. So I can just go back and say, oh, you know, North Korea versus South Korea, I have a lot of content from both of those countries, and I have things to say that I wasn't able to say when I was in North Korea. So I'm just recycling content. But it's making me anxious. How I've been spending my time is with my family in Arizona a lot. My girlfriend and I live out in LA now. The only thing to do now is go walk around the block and go to the park and hang out, or go hiking. The hiking trails just opened. The beaches are still closed here in LA. They should be opening up soon. don't know. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare situation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, imagine with those, with all those hard drives and going through your old stories. Like, I mean, with your travel schedule and your production schedule, like you really don't have that much time to just kind of pause and reflect on so many of the incredible experiences that you've been having, like, you know, for the past 8 years. So now that you're, you know, now that you're at home and slower pace and going through old content, like I imagine there's like a level of introspection that you might not have had previously. So how, like any new perspectives or realizations you've gained about yourself or the world in the past?
It is kind of nice to be able to reflect because I do move so fast that once I leave Burundi, I'm in the Congo. And once I leave, you know, Vietnam, I'm in Cambodia. So it's not like I don't really get chances to sit back. So it has been kind of nice. It's also been really nice to not feel pressure to upload and share every single second of my life with everyone. You know, I can go do something. I don't have to post on Instagram stories. And this is actually the first time since 2012 that I can say that. It's the first time that I can go somewhere and jump in my car and drive on a road trip and just not feel the pressure to upload. So for that, it's been great. And yeah, it's been nice to reflect and kind of figure out where I am and what position I'm in and how I'm going to, you know, attack these next six countries and shoot a documentary along the way. But yeah, there's a lot of reflecting going on. When I go through my old content on these hard drives and I'm making stories about Tajikistan or countries that I, you know, only had 5 days in, it's nice to think about it from a fresh perspective and go, I never check my old content ever. I'm always posting new stories from that day. So it's really nice to go back from 2017 in Cuba or something and like remember what I did. So in retrospect, I think these days will be looked at in a very positive light. But when you're in it, like all of us, it's tough.
I want to double tap into something you just said about, you know, shooting and following every second of your day. Mm-hmm. How has that impacted your travel experiencing? Always, you know, your travel experience, always having a camera, always documenting everything, like from both a positive and, you know, a negative perspective. How has that changed what someone else who might have just been doing the same thing you did but not documenting it?
There's really no negative. I mean, everybody thinks that I don't have a work-life balance, but the truth is that I get more satisfaction traveling somewhere and being the messenger and being able to tell the story and share it with millions of people, and that story lives on forever. If I go to Tanzania for 6 days, that's an opportunity to make six videos that I can watch with my grandkids when I'm 60. So even if I don't get to sit on the beach in Zanzibar for 5 days, which I wouldn't do anyways because I have crazy ADD, then, you know, it's fine for me to go there and focus on the story, tell the story, post the story, and then it's there forever and I can look back on it. So I don't feel like I'm missing out. Of course, you could always stay longer. I've spent 4 months of my life in India and I've seen about 5% of that country. So you could always say, oh, I wish I stayed longer in India. I wish I stayed longer, even in a smaller country like Papua New Guinea. You could spend a whole year in Papua New Guinea and see 20% of the country. So there's always the argument you could stay longer. But I maximize my time and I'm proud of the way that I do it. And I will keep doing it that way until I burn out, which we could talk about burnout because it goes in waves.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the reasons, like, I always recommend people to either write or photograph or video, take, you know, shoot video, is you have to be way more intentional about your travels as well, because you're thinking about, you know, what is the story this place ahead of time.
Sure.
You're thinking about it during the time, you think about it afterwards, and there's like a way to synthesize your thoughts that, like, even if you never plan on sharing that content with anyone, like, to write is to kind of help you, you know, the writer more than anyone else. And I imagine it's the same with video.
Yeah, I've gotten the process down to a science. So when I first started video 3.5 years ago, I would just go out and shoot everything and then come on my computer. And it would take me, let's say it took me 8 hours to edit a story in 2017. Now I know exactly what I'm shooting because I have a script more or an outline. And then I edit what used to take me 8 hours to edit would now take me 3 hours. So I got triple as fast as to edit and more efficient. And so, yeah, it's just kind of like driving a car now. It's like I just pump out the stories and it's like I don't even realize I pumped it out until I watch it. It's weird, man. But I've made about 1,000 videos now. So it's like if you do anything 1,000 times, you'll get pretty good at it, I think.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned burnout. So Have you been feeling that?
Yeah, burnout usually happens when I'm doing like 20 countries in like 4 months, which I've done in Africa a couple of times and did it in Eastern Europe, in Central Asia. You kind of cover regions and then, yeah, it's just things start blending together. You kind of lose motivation. You get food poisoning and then it's like, shit, now I'm 2 days behind on my stories. And it just gets harder and harder. It's in a best case scenario, I'll do like a 2-3 week trip, hit three countries, you know, and then have the time to go back to home, which is Manila. I live between Manila and LA. So go Manila and then spend the next couple weeks editing. But when you're just always on the go, I've done 3 long trips in Africa and it's been really tough to keep up. So
there. Yeah, I feel like those types of trips are even more, you know, it induces burnout even more because like sometimes everything is difficult. You know, the transportation is very uncomfortable. Like you cross every single border and you have to just argue with, you know, yeah, another corrupt cop. And like, eventually you're just like, I know, yeah, I'm going to get through this. Like, I know you're just going to need a little bit of money and let me pass, but can we just like, yeah, skip all this BS and like, let's just.
It gets really tough, yeah, man. Another buddy, Alvaro, he's been to every country. I'm sure you know him. He's from Spain, but we drove from Ivory Coast to Dakar over 7 countries last October, like 6 months ago. And man, I've never dealt with more crap in my life. It was a nightmare. It was just thinking about it is making me pretty anxious. I mean, it's just like insane. I don't even know how much money we spent in bribes, but it was a lot of zeros in there. Yeah.
Well, to switch it, I want to get into some like more philosophical stuff and then also, sure, some of the content creation, but like to, I guess, switch it to a little bit of a more positive note. Like one of the questions I get asked a lot, and I think it's actually probably one of the worst questions, is like, what is your favorite country? Yeah. And like, I mean, it's like saying a favorite kid. Like, it just, it's completely like depends on so many factors. But the way I always reposition that question, because ultimately at the end of the day, the reason they're asking is because they want ideas for themselves on where they should, sure, go next. So, you know, for you, having gone to almost every single country in the world, you know, I'll rephrase the question towards you is like, what are some of the most underrated countries that we should all have on our radar that maybe most, like everyone knows France and Italy and, yeah, Thailand, yeah, and Vietnam are fantastic places, sure, to visit, but like, what are some places that people should consider, you know, post pandemic that maybe they might not have had on the itinerary?
I give you brownie points for rephrasing the question because you did a wonderful job in doing so. I do get that. What's your favorite country a million times? The 5 underrated countries. Well, the Middle East and Central Asia are my favorite regions for many reasons. Hospitality would be number 1. So the countries I'm going to throw out are countries that probably are last on everyone's bucket list. But the reason is because I like to go to these places and break stereotypes and show that there, you know, there is a war happening, but there's also 25 million innocent people that wake up every morning, send their kids to school, go to the market to buy dinner, go home, eat food. You know, so the countries that I'm going to say are Syria. I went there. I got a lot of heat for going to Syria, but that's another talk. I'm happy to discuss it. I was there 4 months ago. I did 2 weeks in Syria, 15 days, loved it. Eritrea, this is in the northeastern part of Africa, on the Horn of Africa. It's a fantastic country. Like, you go back in a time machine to the 1950s. Iran, top 5 favorite country in the world. It's literally the nicest people, and they love America. Love. I mean, they were like, everywhere I would go, I'd tell them I'm American on the street, and they're like, oh, wow, like, my uncle lives there, or I can't wait to go there, or, you know, come sit with me. We want to chat to you more. Lebanon is amazing. Beirut's probably my top 5 favorite cities in the world. It's like where Europe meets Mediterranean. It's like a European vibe, but a beautiful coastal views, and you got Roman ruins there, and you got the best food in the, like, Syria and Lebanon have some of the best cuisine. That was 4 countries I named. The 5th one, somewhere in the Pacific. Let's go with Micronesia. All the Pacific is really unique in its own way, but Micronesia is cool. You have 4 big islands. Pohnpei was my favorite. And I don't know, there's not one main reason why I say that. It's just because it's so remote, and it's just a fascinating culture. And if you're familiar with kava, it's like that drink that they make from like the hibiscus plant, and it's like gets you kind of drunk. And it's just cool to like sit there in like a kava ceremony or a kava bar with people. I don't know. I could mention a lot more countries, but those are the 5 that came to mind. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I've been to Beirut a couple times.
It's amazing, right?
Yeah. I mean, the food is by far, it's the best probably in the world. And, and I brought my, you know, my wife and I brought our 1 year old to Beirut, most recently. And like, I've never been to, I mean, every place you go in the world pretty much loves kids and will always embrace kids. Right. Right. But Beirut was just a whole nother level. Like we would go into like, you know, fancy cocktail bars and be like, I don't think we can bring a 1 year old in here. And as soon as we walk in, like the chef and the bartender, like takes him from us and they're like, can we play with him in the kitchen? We're like, maybe not in the kitchen. But it's, yeah, it was so hospitable.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And, interesting. I haven't heard the answer of Eritrea. You know, a lot of my travel, you know, I think of like the first 100, like I've like skipped some of these really, really difficult visa places.
That's just one of them.
I hate dealing with it. And yeah, that's one of the hardest to get into.
It's so, like top five hardest.
I think like out of all of like the eastern coast of Africa, it's Eritrea and Djibouti are the only ones I haven't gone to. And Djibouti is not hard. It just logistically didn't work out. No, that's a good answer. So one thing that you often ask people, and I love this question, but you ask a lot of people at the end of your videos, like what's one message that they want to say to the world? And so I've loved hearing those perspectives from just so many different countries, but I'm curious, as you on the other side of the camera, like what is your one message that you want to say to the world?
No one's ever asked me this. Dude, you're killing this interview so far, man. I get interviewed a lot and this is one of the better ones. For me, just keep it really simple and just be unique. Whatever you do, whether you want to be a video maker, whether you want to be a professional golfer, whether you want to be the next astronaut on space, like there's always competition. You're never going to be the only one to do one thing. Rarely you will be, unless you're setting a Guinness World Record. But you have to be unique and find ways for people to be attracted to you. Find ways for people to you know, want to follow you or see what you're doing versus the other people that do it. So for me, I just try to always be unique in the way that I make videos. And I think that's part of the way that I've been able to grow the way I did. But yeah, that's it. It's a simple answer, man. Be unique and do what you like.
That's great. It's good advice. So with that, like, I think it's like, so one of the most underappreciated probably aspects of your life is just how much work and dedication goes into doing a daily video. Mm-hmm. You know, like you probably do 12 to 15 hour days just for a 3 minute video alone. And I remember, you know, I saw a little bit of this, like I showed Nas Daily around Cairo's Garbage City one time. And like, just to see the pace of like how much goes into like a short video. And then also like how exhausted you often are.
Yeah, we've shot together. We have similar kind of ways about doing things, but yeah, it's a lot of work. It's basically, I'm very spontaneous. So most of the time, I don't know exactly what video I'm shooting until the day before.
Yeah,
I'm just like editing yesterday's video, and I haven't even thought about tomorrow's video. So it comes down to, I have ideas of what I'm going to shoot, but sometimes you don't know the cool local people until you get to the country. So I have this little upcoming videos like right here. So these are all the previous ones, but basically I'll go in and I'll make like a little outline. And then scripting, I script as I shoot. So like as the story's forming, I'm still adding stuff. So scripting and then shooting takes anywhere from, the shortest video I can shoot is an hour. If I'm interviewing someone, I need at least an hour to get all the shots. And the longest, like when I do those $10 budget videos, they take me like 12 hours to shoot. So anywhere from 1 to 12 hours, let's call it 6 hours on average to shoot the video. Then I go back to my hotel. My rule is like when it's light outside, I'm out shooting. And as soon as it gets dark, let's say 6:30 to 7 PM, as soon as it gets dark, I'm on my computer working until about 2 AM and I sleep about 4 hours a night when I'm on the road. So yeah, I'm editing 4 to 6 hours a night. So let's say 6 hours shooting, 4 to 6 hours editing, that's 10 to 12 hours. And then scripting another hour, you know, not, and then is the video is ready to post. Then you got to come up with a creative title. You got to come up, you have to make a thumbnail. Then you got to physically upload it, which Wi-Fi, you know, this as well as I do, but Wi-Fi is a beast, to get over in many countries. So lots of times I'll just press upload and then fall asleep next to my computer and then set my alarm 3 hours later and pray that it actually uploaded. And if it didn't, I do it all over again. That scenario that I just told you, I've done about 300 times in my life. So it's insane. Or I'll just get a SIM card and then hotspot my computer. But then when I do that, the SIM, even if I get 10 gigabyte SIM card, it eats it up. Like, it's crazy. So then it's not so convenient to like go at 2 a.m. to find a new SIM card, or even it's a long stuff. So yeah, it's a lot of work. And then, yeah, after you post a video, then you want to respond to comments for 20 minutes. And then you want to, you know, it's like the marketing aspect too. And I do everything myself, shooting, editing, scripting. So yeah, it's a lot of work. Let's say if I sleep 4 hours a night on average when I'm doing trips, then I'm the other 20 hours, 19 of those hours I'm working. Maybe 1 hour of the day I spend eating and showering, and that's it. And the rest is working. It's crazy, man. It's a lot of work.
It is funny what you say about the SIM cards. Like, that has been a scam that I've been trying to figure out. Like, the amount of times I've like walked in, and not on the street, like I go to a Vodafone or an MTN in some developing country, and
they always mess it up, man.
And I'll pay like, you know, as much as I can, and I get 20 gigs or unlimited gigs, and the fact that like the next minute you're out.
It's never reliable. So I try to book nicer hotels. So I can, it's worth it to spend, if I'm going to spend anywhere from 80 to 150 a night, I'm always spending 150, because that extra $70 to get a better night's sleep and to be able to upload, and I have to spend less time uploading, that equals $70, way more. I would spend even more sometimes in the Gambia, or like in recent trips I've taken in like Ivory Coast. You know, I'll book the nicest hotel for the same reasons I just told you. There's threshold. It's like elite or it's like not elite, kind of.
Yeah.
Not so much middle ground. There's not so many 4-star hotels. There's like a few 5 stars, and then it's like 1 or 2 stars. So I got to go for the nicer places. Yeah.
Yeah. I hear you. I think that like that unpacking of like the behind the scenes and your schedule is a really important message. I mean, so many people, you know, I hear, you know, want to be a travel influencer, want to be a YouTuber, want to be an Instagrammer, or, you know, and like in our world, like how many people want the idea of having a startup, or the fact that we have a travel startup, they're even more like, oh, I'd love it. That just means you get to travel. And what I always remind people is like, to be you, like it requires a serious work ethic and commitment, and is not as glamorous. And if you really just want to travel the world, you probably can find some like maximized time and income opportunities and just actually travel and go at a different pace. But like, what, you know, I think when people like would look at you and the quality of your videos and they see the 1.3 billion views, like it's easy to get intimidated. And so for the person that does want to like really work hard and become, you know, their own unique version of what you've done. Mm-hmm. You know, they see that as like maybe it's not possible. They didn't go to film school. They didn't have the skills, but you were completely self-taught, right? Like what advice would you give to that person on just like how you went from like, you know, you just unboxing your first camera to where you are now?
Yeah.
What you just said about working your ass off.
I have no background in film. I studied economics and entrepreneurship. Then I taught English in South Korea, started a blog. I didn't pick up a video camera until 3.5 years ago and taught everything myself, like through YouTube and just by learning. Honestly speaking, I'm very surprised and shocked that there's not more people doing what I'm doing. I can't believe it, actually. There's a lot of people that do it, but even on a higher level, it's not hard. It just takes time, dedication, money. It doesn't take that much money. I mean, my lifestyle is expensive because I hop countries, but you could just move to Bangkok and focus on Thailand and you could live off $1,000 a month. So it's not, money's not really that big of an issue, but it's just got to put in the hours. As I said earlier, be unique, and eventually you'll find your voice. Like, the hardest part is to start, like, you know, like my first 10 videos were horrible and I can't even watch them. But I can't watch them now because they're so bad. But then you just like, you find your voice, and if one video does well, then you kind of, you know, people want to see that kind of story. And then it just like, you over time, it's like an author or an actor or a producer of TV. Like, the first one they do is not great. And then as you get, like Larry David, he's like a mastermind. He wrote Seinfeld and now he does Curb Your Enthusiasm. But I'm sure in his early days, you know, he wasn't that. And it's just like, the more you do it, the better you get. So you just have to know, like, if you want a short a short escape, like, oh, I can get in and out and make a lot of money. That's not going to happen in this world at all. It's not like, unless you, I'm not like a, I'm just a regular kid, you know, I'm not like a, I didn't have a hit single on the radio, or I didn't just like blow up out of the world, out of nowhere, having a really viral video. It just got to put in the 10,000 hours, and I've put in more than 10,000 hours now. There's no secret recipe. I'm just trying to, like, I don't know how else to say, I'm just like a normal kid, but it just like this workhorse. There are, probably are other ways to get lucky or collaborate with someone and get featured or be on a big, you know, try to get on CNN. I mean, I haven't really done that, but there are ways to do it, you know, like build up a crazy PR team behind you to try to like get you out, which I haven't done. But yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of putting in the hours. And I'm, once again, I'm so surprised that more people don't do it. I'm really surprised. It's wide open. There's no barrier of entry. You can just pick up a camera. You can do it on an iPhone or a GoPro. You know, yeah. This thing is great. A lot of my footage in quote unquote dangerous countries, I've been on a GoPro. So I don't know. You just got to do it.
Yeah. No, great advice. And, you know, obviously your video skills and your voice are and your storytelling abilities are such a big part of what you've gained. But like another thing that's always fascinating is just like how you discover some really unique right. stories. And so how do you discover so many of those unique stories? I'm sure some fall in your lap, but for most of them, how do you discover the unique stories yeah. and connect with good people question. In advance?
Good question. So I never enter a country without having a local friend on the ground waiting to hang out with me. I do that for many reasons, for navigation, for logistics. I don't want to spend, if I have 5 days in Uganda, I don't want to spend so many hours a day on Google Maps trying to figure out how to get around to the restaurant. So having a local friend is great because you can just follow them. It's a win-win. You know, they get to show me their country. They're happy to do that. They get to meet me. We get to make a story together to show off their country. And then what I get out of it is, you know, someone who knows the local language. For safety, you know, when I'm in a place like Mogadishu, which I recently was with Lee, in December, you have to have a local friend. You have to. I'm risking my life if I don't. And then if I do get into trouble, they can explain, oh, he's my friend. He's here with me. So I try to keep it low key, you know, one local friend, and I always meet them through Instagram, or they'll just message me in advance. Like, hey, when you come to South Sudan, let me know. But on Instagram, I usually do a post like, hey guys, I'm going to be in South Sudan, Eritrea and Djibouti over the next month. Do you have any friends there? DM me if you're there. And then I get a lot of messages, and then I kind of, you know, stalk them for 5 seconds and see if they look cool. This is just me being honest. And then I'll get their phone number and I'll call them. I'll Skype them and be like, hey, I'm excited to meet you, just to kind of make sure that I trust my judgment. And so far it hasn't failed me once. And then, yeah, then, you know, we spend the time together, and they help me a lot because they know what I'm trying to shoot, you know? Mm-hmm. So they know this. And so how do I find the stories is always through them. In advance, like a week before I get to Rwanda, I'll talk to my buddy and be like, hey, here, I'll give you a better example. Like Palau is my next country. So I already have a local friend there, and I already have scouted out the stories I want to tell, more or less. And then when you get there, then it's also asking around, like going to people on the street and being like, hey, do you have any friends here who have a really interesting life or inspiring story, or where's the best street food in town? Usually street food is a good place to start because the person has been cooking the same burger for 70 years, and that's already a good story. I don't know. It's just a matter of getting lucky too, being in the right place at the right time, but there's always interesting people. Where are you from? Where are you right now?
Chicago.
Oh, great.
Not from Chicago, but I live in Chicago.
Oh, yeah. I love Chicago. So, in Chicago, there's so many million people, and there's no shortage of, I could probably make a story. Well, I can make a story about anyone. You can yeah. just meet someone and find an inspiring aspect about them. But there's probably so many people who have crazy life stories in Chicago. It's hard to find them. You just got to talk to Chicago people from there, and then they can ask around. You can't really Google, I've tried this. You can't Google like inspiring people from Chicago. It'll just give you a list of like motivational speakers or the top athletes or something. To really find the good stories, you have to ask the locals. So that's what I do. And sometimes it comes out great. And sometimes I go to countries and I don't get good stories, and it might not reflect. You might not think it's good, or the viewer might think it's a great story, but I always have like a standard of what story I want to tell. And actually I would say oftentimes I don't get the story that I want to tell, and I end up like telling a story that's just whatever. So I don't know, man. It's tough. It's stressful. It's stressful.
Yeah. I think people also really underappreciate, you know, even if you're not shooting videos, just like how hospitable people around the world are and how easy it is to connect with them. Like I always recommend, like, if you're part of a community in your own home city, like for me, like, I don't know if you're in tech or entrepreneurship or media or whatever, like whenever I go to a new city, I reach out to those people. So I've been places like, you know, you mentioned Uganda, like before I went to Kampala, I looked at every VC, every private equity, every startup, exactly. And I sent a couple emails. And in, you know, if I did that in, you know, I don't know, like New York or London, everyone's like, yeah, I don't really care. Yeah, but if you go to Kampala and you say, hey,
100%.
I'm an American, here's my company, I'm going to be in town.
100%.
Like, they'll instantly meet up with you and then also instantly introduce you to every single person you'll ever want to meet. And then like you leave being like, well, now I have dozens of friends and I know the community. And it's cool to see things you know, but in a different culture or context. So what you said, you know, made me think like another interesting perspective is like a lot of the people that you're, you know, like you said, if you're going to Chicago, Michael Jordan and Oprah Winfrey are not like the people that you're trying to interview. You're trying to interview people who are not used to being on camera.
Exactly.
How do you make them feel comfortable and articulate and all the things that like, usually like when people are on camera for the very first time in their life, they're not that much of a natural.
Yeah. So I guess, I direct my own videos cause it's just me. And it's just like, it's an art form because every person is different. And in a best case scenario, someone's used to the camera, they're very extroverted and they're not awkward or shy. And that's very rare. Maybe 5% of all my stories, people's stories have been that person. Most of them are quite shy. Sometimes I just tell them like, hey, listen, I'll just put the camera here. Talk to me. Sometimes, like, I don't always say, look at the camera. It's like, talk to me. And then sometimes if they're really not comfortable, you know, I'll just be like, okay, I'm going to stop the camera. I do this trick. I pretend to turn off the camera and then I just get camera's not rolling. Let's just have a conversation. And then at the end, the camera was rolling and then they're happy because they got what they wanted. Yeah. And there's another thing that I just thought of. I never stick a camera in someone's face if they don't want to be filmed. I learned my lesson the hard way in a previous countries. You don't want to do that. So I always get their consent and tell them what I'm doing. And then, you know, start filming, but it's hard. You have to, humor is a big thing. You want to make people laugh, even if it's not related to the story. I mean, that's breaking the ice, getting people to laugh. And then, sometimes before I'll get into their story, let's say someone is like, let's say I'm making a video about like a bodybuilder who like lifts crazy weights. Like before all, which I did that story in Nauru, a country in the Pacific, before I get into weightlifting, I'll spend the first 10 minutes just talking about his life. Cause everybody likes to talk about themselves. You know, where you're from, what do you like to do in life? What's your favorite food? Just like really easy questions just to warm them up. I'm not just going to be like, so how much do you bench press? So how much can you squat? Like that's too aggressive. So it's just, you got to feel out the person. But it's a case by case basis. I mean, there's no one formula. But I'm very aggressive okay, I'm going to make a story on you. I'm not aggressive in a bad way, but I'm like, this is how I'm going to shoot it. Like, let's talk about this. But it's just feeling out the person, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's gotta be interesting how, you know, you have such a public life because people see the good and the bad and they, you know, see basically every single day, of you, and you have a very big audience. What are the biggest misconceptions that people have of your lifestyle and your career?
That's a good question. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is they think that I don't work hard because basically we talked about this already, so I won't go into in depth, but they just see the final product of the video. They just see after I press publish, but they don't know that it actually took me 17 hours to make that video that they're watching. So that's the biggest thing. And then also like travel is not really glamorous unless you go to like Bora Bora or Maldives. Like, most of the places I go, it depends. It is glamorous and it's fun, but a lot of the experiences that I choose to do, which are not Maldives and Bora Bora, are not glamorous. And I make the story look glamorous because you can do a lot of cool things with the camera. But it's like, you know, I don't know off the top of my head, but or maybe just let's talk about food poisoning. I get food poisoning like once a month when I'm on the road. And I never really talk about it. In Yemen, I did one video about getting food poisoning, which went pretty viral. But I try not to talk about food poisoning. But people don't realize that, like, it's not like every day I wake up you know, smiling and not, you know, feeling 100%. Also, long travel days, you know, sitting in airports, eating shitty hotel food or airport food, or being, you know, flight delays, you know, these, all these things that come with travel is not really displayed in my videos, because I try to look at the positive side. So there's a lot of negative stuff, negative things that I come across that I just don't share. And that's a misconception. Once again, there are many countries that this is not the case for. You know, if you go to Canada, it's hard to find a negative experience there. You know, if you go to France or whatever, Norway, it's like you could try as hard as you want to have a bad day in Norway and you just won't have a bad day. You know, the Netherlands, New Zealand. But there are many other places that are the opposite. So I try to be optimistic. But I, once again, the stories that I share are just like a sliver of my day. You know, it's like one little experience or one person that I met that I interviewed that I'm telling, but you don't know how I got there. You don't know that, you know, the taxi I was driving in had no AC and it's 127 degrees outside. I don't show you that part. So yeah, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, well, perhaps this is a bit of a selfish question. You know, it's, so I'm almost, I'm over halfway of every country, you know, at about 100. Certainly it's a goal of mine to go to every country in the world. I don't have any timeline. You know, I have two little kids and a venture backed company. And so my pace of travel has slowed down significantly.
Okay.
You know, it's, to me, it's a lifelong, goal. So what advice, you know, what advice would you have to with me or anyone else who wants to go to every country? You know, especially
so the first 100 are
almost done.
The first 100 are very easy. Mostly visa free. You have a US passport, I'm assuming.
US and EU.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Awesome. So you have a huge leg up on me in terms of visas. But yeah, so the first 130 countries are really easy. There are about 50 that are really hard to get to, really hard to get visas for, really expensive. Equatorial Guinea, you don't need a visa for American passport. Every other passport needs a visa for Equatorial Guinea. It's $300 a night minimum at the shittiest hotel in the country. So just planning logistics in Equatorial Guinea is a nightmare. It's so expensive. I spent like $1,500 in like 4 days there. You get a burger and it's $70. 70, not 20, not 30, not 40, 70. At least the place I went was 70 with tax and tips. So I don't know. It's really hard. It gets really pricey. But what tips would I give you? I don't know how much time you have, but like try to do them in regions. So where haven't you been? Which regions have you not been to?
I've been to every region, just not every country within that region.
So like with West Africa, I recommend doing it the way I did. It was get a driver, which I can put you in touch with a good one. And then you just, you know, those are all, it's like the East Coast of the US, you know,
yeah.
It's all the small countries, but you have to do that in one trip. You're already in the mindset. You're in the zone. You have everything ready. It's like, if you try to break West Africa into three different trips, it just doesn't make sense at all. Some regions you can break into different trips. You know, Central Asia is kind of the same. It's like you have a better experience if you just kind of mush them together. But that's why I said, I don't know how much, if you have 2 weeks to do a trip or if you have a month.
Yeah. To your point about the first, you know, 130 being easy, my West Africa experience was, Burkina Faso, Cote d'Ivoire, Senegal, and I guess Morocco is kind of north, but because of easier to get into.
Yeah.
It was required visas ahead of time. And like dealing with embassies in advance, like is just like one of the bureaucracy is one of the things that I hate the most.
Dude.
And so I'll always just lean towards a place I can walk into. It is interesting though. Like when I did
two passports, man. Oh my God.
When I went up east to the eastern coast of Africa, yeah, it was the two passports things really confused people because, you know, cross land borders.
Yeah.
Leave one country on, you know, US and then the next one I have to use my Polish, and they would just, you know, be like, wait, you didn't leave any other country in Africa? How the hell did you just walk up here?
You just explain to them that I'm dual citizen, but that is a pain.
Yeah.
I know.
So then appreciate the advice. So how does it feel? Like you're almost done. Like, you've been working at this for a long time. Like what's your perspective? Like, what are your travel plans after you finish?
It feels great. it's been nice to kind of have before the finish line to have some breather time, a lot more reflecting. This time reflecting should have happened after I finished, but I'm already reflecting on everything. Yeah, this documentary I'm shooting in my last six countries, it's going to be great. We have a whole production team behind it, and it's just going to kind of, it's not so much a travel series like what I'm going to be doing in each country. The countries are just like a chapter, like the framework. And then when they're a jumping off point. So when I get to Palau, it's a jumping off point for sustainability and what that means to me and how I've noticed, you know, a global, you know, uprise in consciousness about sustainability. And then I'll go back to Palau and then I'll go to Saudi Arabia. And then that's a jumping off point for religion. I'm Jewish, what that means to me, how I've connected with Judaism, and also how I love Islam and what that means to me. So then I'll jump around the world, but then I'll go back to Saudi Arabia and then, you know, go off into the desert. And then that's a jumping off point into desert countries. You know, I'm from the desert in Arizona. You know, I love desert countries. So it's just kind of, and then when we go to Venezuela, that's a jumping off point for difficult visas to get, you know, economic, it's a good point to talk about economics, inflation, all that stuff. So like I said, yeah, the six countries are just the framework. We're not going to be doing a deep dive about things to do in those countries. It's not that so much of a travel documentary in that regard. It's more of like tying this whole journey together in my realization. So that's what I've been working on. That's why I'm in LA right now. My producer, Chris, he's out here. So we've been meeting every day, you know, discussing the script and the theme and how we're going to do it. And we're doing it as best we can. I mean, we have a big budget that we've raised about 80% of it so far, which is great. And I'm confident we'll get the other 20%. And we're going to make the best documentary that, you know, no one who's been to every country has put it in a documentary. So that'll be a first in that regard. And then after that, hopefully that, you know, that will get in the right hands and it'll lead me to the next chapter of my life. So it'll be nice to kind of be done with the every country thing, because you really have to try going on to giving you advice. You have to really try to visit a country like South Sudan. Like, you really have to try, you know, Senegal, you know, it's more enjoyable, like you said, Burkina Faso, but, you know, Central African Republic, you know, it's like, why would you go there? Sometimes when you're there, you're like, what am I doing here? You know, why am I risking my life? So you really have to, especially in some Pacific Island countries like Tuvalu, when there's one flight a week, it's like, you have to really, really try to get to Tuvalu. You know, you don't just like end up, you don't dream. When you're 15 years old, you're not like, oh, I really want to go to Tuvalu. You know, like I said, there's 100 countries or 130 that pretty much all of Europe is enjoyable. You know, all of North America, Central America, even South America, there's only 13 countries in South America, you know, but then you get into Central and West Africa. Southern and Eastern Africa are great, you know, easy to travel through and visa free. That gets a little more challenging. And then, you know, Asia is so big. Southeast Asia, East Asia, those are easy, enjoyable. But then you get into, you know, Central Asia and it's like getting visas and all this stuff. Bhutan, it costs $250 a day to go to Bhutan, a day as a travel tax. I don't know if you know that or not.
Yeah.
And then the Pacific Islands is its own puzzle piece that you got to figure out. But yeah, I mean, if there's a will, there's a way. So you'll get there. And I'm happy to help you out and share some tips along the way. But I feel happy that I'm at the end.
Well, I appreciate it. And glad to hear it. Everyone else, I have just a couple more questions and we'll open it up to Q&A. So I see a ton of Q&A being dropped in there. So add your questions there. I see some that have been put in chat, which is awesome, but move those to Q&A so Andy can make sure to read them off. And if you see someone who has already asked something that's on your mind, just give it an upvote. But Drew, I can't wait to see the documentary. It sounds like it's going to be amazing. And it sounds like you're touching on a lot of things that are really on my mind. Like, you and I both believe travel can be such a force for good. Like, I mean, so much of the problems in the world are just purely a lack of curiosity. You look at something you don't understand with fear or hate even, as opposed to just genuine interest and fascination. And so, but like, because travel has become more accessible, more easy, more sought after, it's created a lot of issues that it sounds like you're going to address, like over tourism, flash tourism. Like, certainly the movement across borders is also creating a lot of conflict in the world. Like, and one of the things that fascinates me is like, we've never had like all these good and bad trends are going on at the same time, but we've never really had an opportunity to just like, as an industry and as a travel community, to just pause.
Yeah.
Reset like we do now. Like, everything is pausing and reset. So like, when we do go back to travel, What do you like? What's your advice and what are your hopes to like make sure we get it right, both to like maximize our own experience, but also just to preserve, you know, the environment and travel and everything I love about destinations?
I'm a big fan of, you know, the positives outweigh the negatives. It's kind of inevitable. The global population is going to hit 8 billion in like 10 years. So there's more and more people. So resources are less and less. That's inevitable no matter what. I'm a big fan that, you know, local travel. So here's one piece of advice I can give is like, if you go to a country, don't stay at the Hilton or the Marriott because that money is not staying in the country. You know, always support local, you know, if you're going to buy fruit, go to the fruit stand on the side of the road because that money is going into the country, you know, into the person's pocket. You know, if you go to Disneyland in Hong Kong, you know, that money is not staying in Hong Kong. That might be a bad example, but you know, a lot of these big enterprises, the money just goes off sea. My point is like a lot of countries rely on tourism, like solely rely on tourism. And like Palau is my next country, you know, like 80% of their GDP like relies on tourism. So I'm a big fan of not, you know, stopping tourism because you're scared the world is, you know, you're not being, you can be more sustainable and there are different measures you can take, but people that are like, you shouldn't be flying. And it's like, come on, let's think about the other extreme. What if nobody flew? Then how would we advance as a human, as a society? So, you know, it's a double-ended sword, but I look at it as a positive far outweigh the negatives when you can go and, you know, I think tourism accounts for like 15% of the world's employment or something. I think it's 15%. So just by you going to Palau, you're already, you know, putting money into their pockets and giving people jobs. And I think that's a great thing. So as soon as travel opens up again, I want to be the pioneer, the first person to go. I'm talking about in 3 weeks from now. And, you know, maybe it's not 100% smart and maybe I'll have to wear gloves in the airport, which I'll do, or get tested right before I go, which I'll also do. But I want to be the pioneer to start traveling again. And people are like, oh, Drew's making videos again. You know, I feel happy. I feel optimistic. I see the light at the end of the tunnel. I want to be the first person to bring happiness and inspiration back into the world. So that's why I said, as soon as one of those six countries open up that I have left and I'm not going to be quarantined for 14 days, I'm on the next plane. So I'm looking forward to that.
What about your advice to people? Like as they, like just to make sure they're getting the most out of their experience and not, you know.
You mean
when they are traveling, like to make sure, like right now we have a ton of time to think about where we're going next, how we're going to go explore it. And I think that there's going to be a rush to just try to like cram it all in. For people,
I don't know. I kind of disagree. I think it'll be a little bit slow. Even when airlines open up, people will be either scared to go on a plane or uncertain about flying or where what's going to happen in the country. Certainly, or they're just not going to have enough money to go because 40 million Americans are filed for unemployment. So it's not like people just have a lot of money in the bank to go on a trip to Europe right now. So I think travel will come back very, very slow. Do you agree?
Oh yeah, 100%. Like I think there's not going to be a binary moment until there's like a specific cure or vaccine.
Yeah, sure.
There's not going to be a specific moment, but I do think
things
will come back in waves. Like I think very soon people will start going to national parks. They'll start going to road trips. They'll start camping a lot more.
It's happening now. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, and then after that, like people are going to go, like, you know, where I'm from, like people will go to Milwaukee, not Chicago. Like they'll go to a lot of the second cities. Yeah. And I think it'll trickle in, and certainly some people, like, you know, you will be on a more aggressive side of the timetable, and certainly certain destinations who've handled it better or who are less vulnerable will react differently. So I certainly think it'll be a wave. But you know, I do know that the desire to travel and the desire for unique experiences is only going to be heightened after people have been locked into their house. Finally, just like a simple question. What gear do you travel with?
I travel with a Panasonic Lumix GH5 is what I shoot everything on. GoPro, I shoot a lot on this, GoPro 8, for more like walking through markets to keep it, you know, low key. And then a drone, a DJI Air, but I'm getting the Mavic Pro 2 before my next trip. And then I shoot a lot on my phone too when I'm just like around. So four devices I can shoot. And then it's mostly my Panasonic GH5, like 90% of my footage comes from that. And that's it. Then throwing it all on the computer and putting it into one piece.
Yeah, I think it's another good reminder that it's about the story. And it's all about the story. The effort.
You can do everything on the phone, man. It's people are watching on the phone. 80% of people watch my videos on their phone. So why not? Why not make it on the phone? You know, it's not about, it's not like making an IMAX movie that people are going to be, maybe the documentary is different what I'm doing, but for YouTube videos, people are watching on their phone. So you just got to make a good story.
Yeah, totally. Well, I am going to pass it to Andy to take over some Q&A, but first just want to say, Drew, thank you for spending your evening with us, but also like, thank you so much for the work you do. You know, you've worked your ass off to share with all of us travelers, the stories, the people, the places the world typically doesn't hear about. And many of these stories are from places that most people haven't heard of, or even worse, you know, like we talked about earlier, have misconceptions or fear about, but you've shown the humanity, the positivity and the honest truth, and you've done it in a really authentic way. And through that, I believe you've brought this world closer together and made us all a little more curious, a little more compassionate, a little more connected as a result. So look, we see all your hard work. We appreciate it. We're entertained by it. We learn from it. And we're all just really grateful for the work you do. And so thank you.
Thanks for having me, Conrad. It's been really fun. And like I said, this is the third time now that this has been a fantastic interview. You've clearly done, I don't know if it's homework or preparation, but that intro that you gave me was great. And it was very fluid. And the questions you asked were great. Like you didn't ask me, what's your favorite country? You say, what are your most, you know, recommended? So awesome job, man, on your end. Keep it up. And I look forward to the Q&A that's happening right now.
I appreciate it.
Yep.
Andy, you're on mute.
I know how Zoom works. So bunch of interesting questions for you. You know, first one, and it's funny that you just sort of mentioned this, like, you know, there's always the question of what's your favorite country, which is sort of an impossible one. But I do like the narrowing question of where would you choose to live? And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, you said you're splitting your time between Manila and LA. How do you end up choosing Manila?
My girlfriend's from the Philippines, and I love that country even before we met. And I'm a big Asian guy. I've been living in Asia since 2012, Korea, Vietnam, Thailand, now Philippines. So my answer is straight going to be one of those countries. It's somewhere in Southeast Asia. For me, it checks all the boxes of what I like about the world and, you know, what makes me happy. It's beautiful, nicest people. It's very affordable. You got beaches, you got jungles, you got whatever, wildlife. Food is incredible. And you're just a plane hop away from, I think there's a stat. It's like, if you're in Bangkok, within a 4-hour flight, so any direction within 4 hours, there's more people living inside of that circle than outside of it. So just think about that for 2 seconds. You know, you can get anywhere within 4 hours. So that's why I like there.
Yeah. So one thing that I'm always fascinated by, you know, and I've talked to a couple people, you know, who have made the trek and seen every country in the world is, how did you figure out which ones you were going to be saving for last? So you have the 6 remaining, like, just tell us about what the whole stretch looks like and what intention was behind that.
I purposely wanted to choose 6 of the most opposite countries because I knew that I was shooting a documentary 2 years ago. I didn't pitch it until about a year ago, but I knew that this is what I wanted to do. So I tried to pick countries that are different geographically, different culturally. They have different cuisines, different ethnicities. So that's why Palau, you've got the islands life. Saudi Arabia, you know, home of Islam. Then you got Ghana, which is, you know, Africa, West Africa. And then Venezuela, which is its own category of whatever you want to call it. And then Jamaica was a nice ending country that it's close to home. So yeah, I just tried to spread it out. I didn't want it to be like my last country's Yemen, because it's like I would be there by myself and then it wouldn't be as enjoyable. So yeah.
What country or travel experience made you want to go to every country? Like, where were you where you had that sort of epiphany and set that goal?
Yeah, I was teaching English in South Korea right after college, and I started a blog. And that's when I discovered Lee Abamanti, who's one of my best friends now. And he was the first person I had heard of that had been to every country. He was kind of one of the first people to do it. He was like one of the first 50 people, I think, to finish. So I looked up to him as a mentor. Now he's a best friend. But it was through him specifically where I heard about it. And then I was like, I was 23 years old and I had been to like 50 countries and I was like, why not just do it? So I did it.
So, you know, you mentioned as soon as one of those 6 countries open, you're going to hop on a plane and go do that no matter what it takes. But, you know, I think like all of us who are either travelers or, you know, working in the travel and tourism industry from one way to the next, like we keep trying to predict the future and be like, what's going to be the real long-term impact on how we travel? What are some of your top takes? Like what's going to be the new normal?
Definitely wearing masks in airports. everything that could be done without seeing a person, like checking bags. A lot of airports, you just do it yourself, but now it'll be like 100% you do it yourself. Boarding airplanes will be boarded earlier. No middle seats for a while, I think, or every other aisle they'll skip. That'll last for several months, but I don't see it. Even if coronavirus isn't eradicated in a year from now, I still think things will slowly get back to normal. But yeah, it's gonna be. I guess if you ever wanted to go to like Venice, Italy without tourists, this would be the best time to go because it's pretty much empty. So
we get to see Los Angeles with no traffic.
Yeah, like yeah, that's what I'm doing. That's what I did today. So there's things you can capitalize on as travelers like us. You know, we would love to see the Colosseum without any people. So now you can do it. And the tour companies, as soon as you're able to enter a country, that means it's safe enough that the tourism industry will be back. So all the, you know, tour, like if you want to go to the Colosseum, and you're able to get to Italy, the Colosseum will be open. It's not like Italy is going to open up its borders, but everything's still shut. So I'm very hopeful and excited that when Saudi Arabia opens, I'm going to be there and it'll be Saudi Arabia. It's not going to be like a hidden, I mean, I still think people will be wearing masks maybe, but I think it'll, you know, we're humans and we're very resilient. So whenever a curveball is thrown at us, Great Depression, 9/11, whatever you want to say, we always bounce back. So we'll bounce back. I think we've seen the hardest days, but maybe there'll be a second wave and I'm wrong, but I'm very optimistic and I'm hopeful that, that things will get back to normal soon, but for sure, before they get back to normal, it'll be different for a while. Like I said,
for sure. All right. Two more to end. So
sure.
You mentioned something that I think like, you know, I think Instagram has always put this halo around travel and it's like, you know, we're always showing our perfect pose perfection. Right. And you know, you said it, like a lot of travel is not really that glamorous. It's a lot of airports. It's sometimes just a lot of BS. Like describe like sort of where your work ethic has come from to get through these nonstop years of 17-hour days. Like what's the origin of that and what's kept you humming?
Oh man, I don't know what the origin is. It's like something I'm born with. You can't like teach motivation. I guess like when I want something, I do everything I can to do it. I'm like a workhorse. You know, you hear a lot of athletes saying the same thing. Like I just put in the hours and, you know, how do you become the best first baseman, you know, in the MLB? It's just like, you just got to put in the hours. So it was just like a natural tendency for me to want to be the best at what I do. Not everybody's like that. And I understand that, but I don't know. I just, it's not something that I can just say like, hey, you have to do this differently. It's like something that you're born with. That's probably not the answer you're looking for, but it's hard to give an answer to that. How I stay motivated.
Totally. All right. Last question. So I think, you know, for so many of us, like food and travel are so perfectly coupled. And I think part of the, you know, not only can you say you've been to every country in the world, but you've probably also literally eaten everything in the world for what it's worth. So, you know, if you could only eat one cuisine for the rest of your life.
The cuisine question. If I could eat one cuisine for the rest of my life, it would be Korean food because Korean barbecue, nothing is better than all the side dishes, all the soups, the meat. It's like all in one. Like, it's not like one dish that you're eating. So I love Korean food and I'm actually craving it really badly as I speak. So it would be Korean food.
Can I make a twist to that question since I like to usually twist those questions? And I've asked this to a lot of like interesting people on these conversations, like Andrew Zimmern, or, you know, like I said, Lee Abamonte answered it the other day. So I'm curious to hear your perception. If you had to pick, if you could go anywhere for dinner and you had a budget of $5, $50 and $500, which city in the world would you pick for each of those budgets?
$500, I'd probably go to Oslo or Vegas because Vegas has a lot of good restaurants, but I can't afford any of that shit. $5 would be Vietnam for sure. And $50 for dinner. Let me think about that for a second. $50 for dinner. I'd go with Beirut. Beirut's got a lot of good food, but it's not that cheap. But it's not like Norway expensive. But it's just kind of like maybe more or less US prices in Beirut. So they got damn good food. And if I had $50, I could get a good meal there in Beirut.
So you're great not question. Gonna go with, you're not gonna go with like the Equatorial Guinean hot dog or something like that for $50?
Probably not. No, probably not. I'll pass on that.
Well, Drew Conrad said, but I'll sort of say it another way too. Like so much of what we're really trying to do right now with this travel from home community is like, take the joy and the connection, like the inspiration that like we all love from travel, and try to keep that alive when, you know, really the only walls we're seeing are the ones in our own house. And, you know, frankly, between the work that you do through all your videos, but also just being with us here tonight and just being able to see into your world in a way that maybe we don't always get to see. For a lot of us today, that is travel. Like, we got out of our house because you took the time today. So for all of us, like, an absolute, you know, thank you. And we're excited to see when your journey resumes and cheer you on for the rest of the way. Just thanks for being here with us. You can be, well, anywhere in your house.
Thank you so much, Andy and Conrad. It's been a blast. I hope you're saving this so I can rewatch it.